And it's seven. Well, no, it's not seven. It is almost 7 o'clock, and you're listening to CF 7 o'clock right now. You are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queens University, Kingston, Ontario, and continuing the Aboriginal Voices second hour, hour two of the long running.
Well, right at the end of hour one there, you were listening to Izquay.
I was. Yeah, I was listening to...
Nobody knows.
Yeah. Hey, any Tom Wilson fans out there?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot.
There are.
Because he had so many different bands and whatnot. Mm-hmm. He is going to be at the Lost Mile Barn on Sunday, May 24th. Did that just pass?
No.
We missed it.
No, May 24th. That's coming up.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Next month.
So yeah. May 24th, you can if you can find the Lost Barn.
Where would I look for a Lost Barn?
It's outside of Ancaster.
Ancaster.
Where's that?
Just outside of Hamilton.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, maybe it's Ancaster's been swallowed up by Hamilton. I don't know. There's Ancaster, Dundas, and in sort of just west of Hamilton or Burlington.
Maybe I suggest you wait till Tom gets closer.
Like to, he came to Prince Edward County, right?
He has been there on numerous occasions. But, you know, if you needed to.
Tom Wilson did a song called Blue Moon Drive with Izquay.
Oh, very nice.
That's
good
what
for
we
him.
Played in that first hour, just before.
Nice. I'm
yeah,
so happy.
Just before... Lori did her talk about astronomy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Well, there you go. Tom coming, and you can go and see him, and he'll play his guitar and all of that.
Okay. I hear.
And sing.
I heard that Mimi Obonsawan is going to be in Trenton.
Is she?
Yeah.
Very
next week,
nice.
I think. Bandcamp has that information.
What's she going to do there?
She's playing a show in Trenton.
Is she playing an acoustic a set?
Now, that I don't know.
Or is it going to be electric?
I don't know. We'll have to find out more. I think it's next, their first weekend in May.
First weekend in May.
That would be like the 2nd of May, maybe.
Would it?
Yeah, because Friday is the 1st of May. I'm not sure. We'll have to find out. Let you know.
Yeah.
Okay. What else do you have?
I'm looking.
Oh, I like the idea that you talked about when you showed.
What did I say?
You showed me some technical equipment.
Okay, so there's a Justin Pioche,
mm-hmm.
And he's a Navajo chef from New Mexico, and he was crowned a champion on Chopped, a special episode. What's a special episode? You can't be on the regular one.
No, why not?
You got to be on
because
the special
Navajo,
episode.
Right?
Yeah, it's too far away you to fly in.
Yeah.
Indigenous Inspirations, which aired on April 21st on Food Network. I'm sure it's in reruns already. The episode marked the first time the show centered an entire competition on Indigenous cuisine.
So that's why it was special. It was entirely on Indigenous cuisine.
So he competed against Maria Gladstone, Ray Naranjo, and Jessica Walksworth. Advancing through each round with dishes inspired by Indigenous ingredients, techniques to secure the final win. Good for you, Justin. So he's a Navajo chef, Justin Pioche, and he wins the Chopped. Have you ever watched that Chopped show?
No.
Yeah, me either. I like the shows where they sit down and they say, yeah, we're going to cook for you. I don't like them when they say, oh, yeah, by the way, we're in competition with the other cooks.
Hmm.
Why?
I don't know.
Why has this become such a huge monstrosity on TV, on that food channel? I'll tell you why, because it costs nothing to produce. Carry on.
No, you know too much about television.
Trying to find other stuff, Doug. You can continue talking if you'd like.
You're doing a fine job. I like what you're doing. Yeah. I've got something that's coming up a little bit later about birds and language.
So I hear till next year we may be having a show on territory. Maybe I better not. I think I've said too much.
Oh, okay.
I might jinx it. Oh. I would hate to jinx it.
What kind of show would you like to have?
Me?
Yeah, here. Like, could we do
I think a science show.
Right. Rockets.
Rockets. Rockets and more rockets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we should get the STEM...
I think we should. I think them STEM people should show up here, and like they'll be. We thought maybe we'd count the amount of gypsy moths they have. No, that's like who wants to learn hear about that? We want to hear about rockets.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're gonna have to do remote broadcasting from there because you have to go outdoors with rockets. So.
I was very interested in reading about these, so I thought I would investigate the worm that only lives in the Arctic.
Oh,
no!
Why not?
'Cause rockets are more fun.
Yeah. Okay. We're gonna go to a little piece of music and...
Do these worms, do they fly rockets?
I don't know. We could put them in it.
No, they don't fly rockets. Well, then I don't want to hear about it.
Okay.
Bring the rockets.
There you go. Okay, I have Iskwe. Just for you. You ready? What's the name of this song? Oh, Soldier.
Live music fans, get ready. Spring Reverb returns for its fifth edition May 28th through the 31st in downtown Kingston, Ontario, and CFRC is thrilled to be part of the action. Over 4 days, you can catch live music panels, workshops, and see what makes the Kingston music scene tick. Get ready for acts like Bedouin Sound Clash, The Dirty Nil, Hot Garbage, By Divine Rights, Slaves of Spanky, Pony Girl, Tanya Iyer, Golden Feather, and so much more. Also, make sure to check out all the free panels, workshops, a merch market, and the first ever Cataraqui Punk Rock Flea Market. For more information on the lineup and tickets, visit kppconcerts.com or Spring Reverb YGK on socials. See you there.
I'm here to tell you to come to our Sistema Kingston year-end concert.
It's on May 14th at 4:30 p.m.
It's admission with donation.
We will be performing at the Isabel Bader Center.
You'll hear strings, orff instruments, and lots of singing.
Hope to see you all there.
Every day, you hear something new on CFRC. Can you keep up? You need a weekly recap. Catch up with What's Climbing Friday mornings at 10. The Charts on CFRC.
Barkley, and I am Program Director with the Oak Ridges Marine Land Trust. Our stars of the evening, I will introduce in a little bit, Joseph, Andres, and Junaid. I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. And I'm asking the people listening to just, when you hear land acknowledgement, to really think about the words and appreciate what the intent of it is and why they're being used. We acknowledge that Indigenous people have had and continue to have presence and deep connection with the lands on and near the Oak Ridges Moraine, a part of what is known to the Indigenous people of North America as Turtle Island. These lands are the territories of the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Chippewas of Georgina Island, Rama, Beau Soleil, and of the Mississaugas of Elderville, Curve Lake, Hiawatha, and Scugog Island, the First Nations of the Williams Treaties. We would like to thank them and other Indigenous peoples for sharing this land with us. Indigenous people have been subjected to colonial oppression and injustice, and that continues to this day. The Oak Ridges Moraine Land Trust acknowledges that the first step to reconciliation is recognizing Indigenous people and their inherent rights to the land, which will ensure that we are creating a better future by strengthening our relationship with them and the land. Our land trust endeavors to honor the land and its treaties by ensuring healthy ecosystems that thrive forever. We recognize that working together with Indigenous peoples to include ecological traditional knowledge systems moves us towards an equitable and sustainable future. And I'd just like to take this moment to think, or to make a call to action to everybody. If there's any non-Indigenous people in the crowd, which I know there are, to support local businesses, Indigenous businesses, to help share the wonderful knowledge and to speak up against injustices. As I said in the land acknowledgement, sadly, they're still happening today. So speak up, support the local Indigenous communities and businesses. And why we're here today is to help share that knowledge, because it's pretty amazing stuff. So thank you. And so now that the populations have been secured, now I'll turn it to our stars of the night who have broken records for registration, which is pretty amazing. So we have Joseph, Andres, and Junaid from Creator's Garden. And they're going to introduce themselves. So I think they'll probably do better at it than me. They'll probably have more fun with it based on the pre-webinar stuff. So there's three of them, and they're dedicated to regathering and the education of Anishinaabe bird names and significant Indigenous bird knowledges. These knowledges that help us live the life the Great Lakes region has to offer. And I hope I'm not going to do the pronunciation so bad on this, but it's Mino Bimastuwestuin. I'm sorry if I did that wrong. It's a good life. I'm still learning. I'm not very good at other languages. I apologize. So all their contact information is there. Without further ado, I am going to turn it over to our fantastic guest stars for tonight. and let them wow you with all the information they have. So, guys, take it over.
Hey, here we go. Here we go. Okay, so we're hoping that there are a lot of questions and how Joe describes conversations, this physical movement.
Yes.
And so we're gonna cover a lot of ground tonight with you, and it is all in an effort to give you a taste of this vast, incredible source of knowledge that is Anishinaabemowin and the names that exist within the language. So, who are we? You probably already know this guy fairly well. This is Joseph Bithoanaquat, the founder of Creator's Garden. He is an Anishinaabek man from Wequemcong, and he teaches about medicine, nutrition, and living the good life in the Great Lakes region in relation to plants. Has been doing so for over 10 years with communities all across Ontario and beyond. And it turns out he's also obsessed with birds. And so his obsession with birds on a random trip ended him in Costa Rica, where he met this next fellow, Andres Jimenez Monge, who is a Costa Rican biologist who has been doing the same kinds of things that Joseph does here in terms of having deep ecological knowledge of the systems around him just by being in them all the time. What Joe did in Ontario, Andres did in Costa Rica. And so he has a vast depth of knowledge. The biologist of our crew, the fully trained biologist of our crew that we have to constantly convince about the most simple facts that should be undeniable, things that Joseph and I will see with our own eyes, he will deny, and hence we have to make our methodology for confirming names and behaviors of birds very rigorous in order to pass his biological tenure. Andres also worked with Birds Canada for a few years and started the Toronto Bird Celebration, and was also the co-host of the Warblers podcast, which if any of you were fans of it, he was a fantastic co-host on it and spread a lot of wonderful knowledge to people. And he also happens to be my best friend. And I'm also kind of obsessed with birds and insects. Some people who I appreciate very much saying pollinator stuff in the chat. Thank you. Yes, I do some things with bugs and native plants, and I care about bees and bumblebees and sweat bees and everything else that helps keep the world go around. And the three of us are kind of on this journey together, this metaphorical and very literal canoe of trying to collate and attempt to describe the vast depth of knowledge that exists in Anishinaabemowin that we think everybody that lives in this area, that lives on Anishinaabek territory, North America, and well beyond, should learn to appreciate and sort of apply in their own lives. And so with that, you're here at an event called Bird Names in Anishinaabemowin, and I'm expecting that not all of the 433 people here may necessarily know what Anishinaabemowin means. And if you all do, I am slightly terrified of you, because that's too much knowledge. And
that ship has sailed. I'm sweating.
And Andres have to offer you. But in Anishinaabemowin, you can typically break up words and try to understand their meaning by the context of each of those individual components. So if we do that with Anishinaabemowin, we'll take the Anishinaabe and we'll split the Moen. Okay, we'll take just those two big chunks. Anishinaabe, what is that? Who are they? They are the people. You've heard of them in the land acknowledgements already. And so the Anishinaabe part, you're like, great, that is the Anishinaabek, the Anishinaabe people. Check mark. You're done. Great job. Now we move on to Moen. And, you know, a very easy translation is language. But if you were to look up, you know, this root in Ojibwe language or Anishinaabemowin dictionaries, it's, again, useful to know how it is used in other forms in order to really understand what it's saying. And so if you look this root up, you'll find one of the words, dabajamoin. Dabajamoin is storytelling. You're like, stories. Okay, cool. Stories involve your voice. There's talking there. So, okay, cool. This is like a talking thing. Moin, maybe talking. Then you find another word, nagamoin. Oh, that's the sing. Okay, great. Another voice use. So again, you're maybe getting the context that, all right, Anishinaabe and like use of voice language thing is what maybe what Anishinaabe moin is fully meaning. And then you continue to look for that same root and find the word gawen the moin, which is the word for jealousy. You go, oh, okay. So if moin is the sort of like voicing part, what does gawen mean? And sort of do a little more searching around and you find gawen is like something negative, something bad, something sad. And so is like something sad spoken aloud jealousy? Is that what jealousy is in its like pure form? I don't know. That's a whole psychological conversation. And then you keep scrolling further down and you find the word bizan in the moin, which is the word for contentment. And you go, hold on. That's the complete opposite of jealousy. What does moin mean? What and who is moin? And so ultimately, what this tells us is that every single sound in Anishinaabe moin has a meaning, and that meaning changes based on where that sound occurs in a word. And so for our intents and purposes, I will tell you that Anishinaabe moin is Anishinaabe people's language, and that it is all completely contextual. And hopefully you will get a better understanding of this concept by the time we are done with our birds. And speaking of which, we get into our very first one. Now that you have a complete and full understanding of moin, I introduce you to moinans. If you change that single O to an A, now you've ended up with a different word altogether and describing a different species and a different creature altogether. So the NS in here tells you that there is a diminutive involved. And Joe, what does the rest of the word tell us?
Wait, what? I was watching the chat. Sorry.
the chat is bumping right now. It's I don't know. Incredible.
Oh, good.
No, look away.
They want to know why the eyes are censored, Joe. So maybe we should start there. Why do we have censored eyes for now?
Okay, so number one, Junaid is just the greatest. I really appreciate having this guy around. His obsession with my language is amazing. Unbelievably amazing. I cannot even, it's amazing. So yeah, Moanas, that's the there's a little owl in there. So real quick, I promised I was going to focus on birds, whom I really, really love, and not so much plants. But I learn and teach about medicine primarily through Creator's Garden. And when I was learning, I would take knowledge holders out in the forest all the time to go and find medicine, pick medicine, to go and learn all of the different protocols of picking medicine. Here's the dealio with owls. Anishinaabe people living in this part of the world, you know, there's no hospitals, there's no ambulance, there's no doctors. We use plants. Plants are our medicine, and they're valid, incredibly valid forms of therapy. And so that's my job, to teach about medicine. And when you're relying on medicine for all sickness and injury, this is a very important knowledge that you need to be able to live in this part of the world. If you get sick or injured, you need to know your plants that are going to help you. And so plants and plant diversity in a forest is a part of a really, I don't want to say fragile, but perfect system where diversity generally relies. This is the greatest chat in the world. And so most significant species of medicinal plants rely on a process of distribution or distribution strategy called myrmecochory. I don't know if I'm saying that right, Junaid. How do you say it again? Ants, myrmecochory.
Myrmecochory, yeah.
Myrmecochory. See, it sounds way cooler when this guy says it. So myrmecochory. So basically what this means is that birds do not grab seeds from medicinal plants and then poop them out somewhere and that's where it grows. This phenomenon only occurs in other parts of the world, throughout Europe and throughout parts of Asia. The reality is in the north, like in the Great Lakes region, birds are one of the biggest enemies of plants, of seeds. They digest them and they destroy them. So what happens is our distributor of plant medicines are ants. Ants will collect the seed because the seeds have a food called an elaiosome, a casing around that seed. And the ants will eat that casing that is nutritionally complete for them and essentially prepare the seed for germination. And from there, bears, black bears, will grab and eat larvae from anthills, but they end up eating all of those seeds from the medicinal plants as well. And so all of the seeds that ants are collecting, they store them in their home, and bears bring those out and eat them all with the larvae, the nutritionally and calorically dense larvae. And so the bear's digestive system is like this big. And so the seeds go through the bear unharmed, and wherever the bear poops, it's just a giant buffet table for mainly deer mice. Deer mice will see all of these seeds, all of this food, and the mouse will collect all of these, and they will create a network of trails underneath the leaf litter where they bury those seeds a centimeter to a centimeter and a half deep throughout the entire forest floor. And so they bury all of those medicinal plant seeds, and all throughout the winter, they grab those seeds and they digest them and they destroy them. And so the reason why we're not allowed to bother owls, the reason why we're not able to look at owls, the reason why if you impede on an owl's responsibility in an ecosystem, everyone is going to die, is because the owl is responsible for removing the mouse. When they remove the mouse, all of those seeds will germinate. They will not be mouse food. They will become our medicine. And so it's very important for diversity that we rely on for sickness and injury. And so when Andres was the one years ago who told me in Yorkdale Mall, when I met him for the first time after Costa Rica, who said that one family of barred owls can eat 30,000 mice in 1 year. And you compound that with the other species of owls. You compound that with the other protector of medicine, who is snakes, who also remove the mouse. This is a very important system that human beings are supposed to be helping. And so if we are harassing owls, we're impeding on the natural plant diversity of this area that affects our ability to access medicine. It affects pollinators, food sources. It affects so many different things. And so this is why we have such an stringent rule. You cannot bother owls. Now we have the system that we can rely on for to a certain degree, right? And so we're a little bit insulated from this tradition and the importance of it. But this is why in the series, this is why owls carry such an intense responsibility to an ecosystem and our opportunity to live a good life here. And this is why, and this is a sincere gesture of respect to some of the traditional knowledge holders and practitioners who are in the audience here, is that, and we love seeing owls, but to be respectful in this responsibility, very important responsibility portion to allow them to do what they're supposed to do, and to not impede on their responsibility in all of these different relationships. And then just a small gesture to all of the participants here to look at each of those influencers in the cycle, ants, bears, mice, owls, and snakes, and our responsibility to help with each of those processes for our sake, but for the sake of our environment and as well. So all of our first species to talk about owls.
So one of my main roles besides being a biologist is to try to keep these guys focused. This is what I normally do in our conversations. And so after listening to this amazing connection between bears, ants, medicine, and owls, I want to go back to the name. But before I go back to the name, I want to say how responsible this little guy here is, because it is cannibalistic, meaning it eats other owls from the same species. It eats bats, shorebirds, jays, woodpeckers, grouse, swallows, flycatcher, waxwings, crayfish, earthworms, tadpoles, frogs, rats, squirrels, and rabbits. And so you're seeing one of the most vicious. After researching the diet of an eastern screech owl, I was shocked. It eats tadpoles. Do you know how hard it is to catch a tadpole? It's incredible. And so it's very important to understand that owls have this critical role, particularly because they're very attractive. We're not very responsible with owls. We really want to see them, and we don't let them sleep. We constantly harass them. We're not ethical when we find them. But having said that, having said how responsible this dude is,
So moe is to cry. This describing somebody who is crying. Moe, and moe nas is I guess like the little crier. That's how we describe this bird.
Okay, this is the first bird, and I promise everybody, we had a meeting about this. We talked about sticking to just a few minutes of bird. But this has just been the Eastern Screech Owl. And yes, if you listen to the calls of the Eastern Screech Owl, the name should make sense to you. However, see, Joe's got more caveats.
So you see the tremolos at first, and then at the end, there's the whining, a bit like a horse. And so they usually do it in like all together. And that's what gives his name. And looking at the time, we need to start picking it up. So should we go to our next bird?
Going to the next owl, but we are now looking at the barred owl. Okay.
I think I can pronounce this one.
Go on.
So everyone, I've been trying to learn how to pronounce the names of birds. Let it be said, I am not Anishinaabe. I'm Costa Rican. I'm not indigenous, even though in Latin America, we tend to understand as all of us being Métis, all of us being mestizos. But I'm not indigenous. And my role, as Junaid said in this, is to help with the two-eye seeing. I try to be one of the eyes, and we try to be Joe's supporters and help him reach this goal. This is what we do. We try to support Joe in the work he's doing. And so in that process, I'm learning how to pronounce in Anishinaabe. And so please, Ninate, don't judge me.
judge him.
Go, go, go.
Perfect.
You might have noted, what is the first thing that you might have noticed is that there is a very onomatopoeic nature of that sound. Go, go, go. There's a repeat. And when sounds are, or segments of terms are repeated in Anishinaabemowin, it's often emphasizing a behavior. It's often emphasizing that, you know, this creature is repeatedly doing an action. And this will come back around, in other names as well. But Joe, can you tell us about the barred owl and this name in particular? Well, you can just play the sound again, I guess.
My favorite owl sound. I don't think I know exactly who my favorite owl is yet, but Yeah, there is that onomatopoeia. So we kind of have kind of like a little methodology that we try to figure out with each bird for all of the different sounds of all of the different names to try to find out exactly which species we are talking about. And this is something that I've suspected for a very long time, is that a kokoko is how we can describe so many different owls. But each owl has its own specific name that is describing a very unique behavior, physical characteristic, pattern that it accomplishes. And that is what we choose to emulate that species, just like the singing, the crying song of the eastern screech owl. That's how we describe this one. But I think kokoko, if it's not describing the whole family of owls, it's describing this one specifically, because you could just kind of hear just the way that it sounds. Kokoko. My grandma does it real good. Like, exactly. Yeah, so you can just kind of hear it right in the name. But yeah, I really like this one.
And I learned from you, Andres, that barred owls have very unique behavior of, like, hunting very actively on the ground. Can you talk a little bit about the habitat that they prefer?
They really like woody areas close to water, and in many cases, barred owls have been seen wading. Can you imagine an owl just walking in the water to catch some fish? And barred owls are less vicious than some of their close relatives, less vicious than the great horned owls and the eastern screech owl. It has smaller talons than the great horn, and so it has a more limited type of prey that it goes to. But it can be very active on the ground. But I want to circle back to the process that Joe was talking about. One of the challenging things of what we've been doing is that in many cases, Joe goes into a community and he finds a name. But that name might have been disconnected from a bird. And in some cases, people know a bird and they don't know their name. And so what we've been trying to do is working back on the names and on the bird knowledge to understand who does the name belong to. You might remember that Joe said this name, Kokoko, could be the name of the family, the name of the group of owls, or very specifically the name for this owl. And it's because in that process, we need to try to dissect the name so we find who it belongs to. Right, Joe?
Yeah, what each of those sounds are describing is specific to each species. Yeah.
And so, you know, on that note of trying to find those accurate names, we come to what would seem very reasonable, but really in practice doesn't quite pan out. So this is the name Wabgokokok. And so the Wab part is part of the word Wabshkike, which is white, to be white. And the Gokokok you've already been familiarized with. So this is kind of saying, like, this is a white barred owl. And when I said this name to Joe, because so much of my understanding of Anishinaabemowin is from dictionaries and trying to find resources online, he immediately went, yeah, but I never hear that in community. And so, Joe, tell me the struggle you have with this name.
This is really fun for, you know, like, especially for the indigenous people in this audience, or people who are really wanting to learn the language. You run into this a lot, and I have so much experience with this with plants, kind of transliterations, or the way that some research was done, because what happens in research in indigenous communities for so long has been so extractive, is that you find lots of error. You find lots of research that is done, just maybe not in the best practice. So with this one, I've never heard anybody in any community. I go and I teach about medicine in hundreds of communities and hundreds of institutions all over Ontario, all over the Great Lakes region. And as a as payment to me, I ask the community to find people who have bird knowledge, because this is honestly what I've been obsessed with for a very long time. I like telling everybody, I never really liked plants. This was kind of just given to me, and I am responsible for this, and I've been doing the best I could with what I was given for plant medicine knowledge. And so when I go and teach, I want to learn about birds because this is what I really am obsessed with. And so when I go to work in a community to teach about plants, find your bird knowledge holders and try to bring them out to the event, so that during lunchtime and breaks, I could pick their brain and try to find any kind of knowledge that I can about bird names. And I've yet a community to go to where there has been a bird knowledge holder who confidently said, "Wapkokokok, that's a snowy owl." Most of them honestly say, "I do not know." And most of them gestured to Kokoko being the name of the family of owls. That's all of our owls are Gokoko. You know, they all embody all of the sounds that name is responsible for. And just to say Wap Kokoko is a little bit of an easy out. And it's our job to do the research required to be able to find what probably the snowy owl's real name is. Yeah, so we have our work cut out for us. That was a really good point. I really wanted to make sure that we cover tonight.
Okay, moving on to our next owl. And this is the first example of the name including body parts. So Andres, want to try this one again?
No.
Ants, Myra McCokery,
Myrmikery, yeah.
Myrmikery. See, it sounds way cooler when this guy says it. So Myrmikery. So basically what this means is that birds do not grab seeds from medicinal plants and then poop them out somewhere and that's where it grows. This phenomenon only occurs in other parts of the world, throughout Europe and throughout parts of Asia. The reality is in the north, like in the Great Lakes region, birds are one of the biggest enemies of plants, of seeds. They digest them and they destroy them. So what happens is our distributor of plant medicines are ants. Ants will collect the seed because the seeds have a food called an elaiosome, a casing around that seed. And the ants will eat that casing that is nutritionally complete for them and essentially prepare the seed for germination. And from there, bears, black bears, will grab and eat larvae from anthills, but they end up eating all of those seeds from the medicinal plants as well. And so all of the seeds that ants are collecting, they store them in their home, and bears bring those out and eat them all with the larvae, the nutritionally and calorically dense larvae. And so the bear's digestive system is like this big. And so the seeds go through the bear unharmed, and wherever the bear poops, it's just a giant buffet table for mainly deer mice. Deer mice will see all of these seeds, all of this food, and the mouse will collect all of these, and they will create a network of trails underneath the leaf litter where they bury those seeds a centimeter to a centimeter and a half deep throughout the entire forest floor. And so they bury all of those medicinal plant seeds, and all throughout the winter, they grab those seeds and they digest them and they destroy them. And so the reason why we're not allowed to bother owls, the reason why we're not able to look at owls, the reason why if you impede on an owl's responsibility in an ecosystem, everyone is going to die, is because the owl is responsible for removing the mouse. When they remove the mouse, all of those seeds will germinate. They will not be mouse food. They will become our medicine. And so it's very important for diversity that we rely on for sickness and injury. And so when Andres was the one years ago who told me in Yorkdale Mall, when I met him for the first time after Costa Rica, who said that one family of barred owls can eat 30,000 mice in 1 year. And you compound that with the other species of owls. You compound that with the other protector of medicine, who is snakes, who also remove the mouse. This is a very important system that human beings are supposed to be helping. And so if we are harassing owls, we're impeding on the natural plant diversity of this area that affects our ability to access medicine. It affects pollinators, food sources. It affects so many different things. And so this is why we have such an stringent rule. You cannot bother owls. Now we have the system that we can rely on for to a certain degree, right? And so we're a little bit insulated from this tradition and the importance of it. But this is why in the series, this is why owls carry such an intense responsibility to an ecosystem and our opportunity to live a good life here. And this is why, and this is a sincere gesture of respect to some of the traditional knowledge holders and practitioners who are in the audience here, is that, and we love seeing owls, but to be respectful in this responsibility, very important responsibility portion to allow them to do what they're supposed to do, and to not impede on their responsibility in all of these different relationships. And then just a small gesture to all of the participants here to look at each of those influencers in the cycle: ants, bears, mice, owls, and snakes, and our responsibility to help with each of those processes. For our sake, but for the sake of our environment and as well. So all of our first species to talk about owls.
So one of my main roles besides being a biologist is to try to keep these guys focused. This is what I normally do in our conversations. And so after listening to this amazing connection between bears, ants, medicine, and owls, I want to go back to the name. But before I go back to the name, I want to say how responsible this little guy here is, because it is cannibalistic, meaning it eats other owls from the same species. It eats bats, shorebirds, jays, woodpeckers, grouse, swallows, flycatcher, waxwings, crayfish, earthworms, tadpoles, frogs, rats, squirrels, and rabbits. And so you're seeing one of the most vicious. After researching the diet of an eastern screech owl, I was shocked. It eats tadpoles. Do you know how hard it is to catch a tadpole? It's incredible. And so it's very important to understand that owls have this critical role, particularly because they're very attractive. We're not very responsible with owls. We really want to see them, and we don't let them sleep. We constantly harass them. We're not ethical when we find them. But having said that, having said how responsible this dude is,
So moe is to cry. This describing somebody who is crying. Moe. And moe nas is... I guess like the little crier. That's how we describe this bird.
Okay, this is the first bird. And I promise everybody, we had a meeting about this. We talked about sticking to just a few minutes a bird, but this has just been the Eastern Screech Owl. And yes, if you listen to the calls of the Eastern Screech Owl, the name should make sense to you. However, see, Joe's got more caveats.
So you see the tremolos at first, and then at the end, there's the whining, a bit like a horse. And so they usually do it in like all together. And that's what gives his name. And looking at the time, we need to start picking it up. So should we go to our next bird?
Going to the next owl, but we are now looking at the barred owl, okay. Strix varia.
I think I can pronounce this one.
Go on.
So Everyone, I've been trying to learn how to pronounce the names of birds. Let it be said, I am not Anishinaabe. I'm Costa Rican. I'm not indigenous, even though in Latin America, we tend to understand as all of us being Métis, all of us being mestizos. But I'm not indigenous. And my role, as Junaid said in this, is to help with the 2i seeing. I try to be one of the eyes, and we try to be Joe's supporters and help him reach this goal. This is what we do. We try to support Joe in the work he's doing. And so in that process, I'm learning how to pronounce in Anishinaabe. And so please, Ninate, don't judge me.
judge him.
Go, go, go.
Perfect.
You might have noted, what is the first thing that you might have noticed is that there is a very onomatopoeic nature of that sound. Go, go, go. There's a repeat. And when sounds are, or segments of terms are repeated in Anishinaabemowin, it's often emphasizing a behavior. It's often emphasizing that, you know, this creature is repeatedly doing an action. And this will come back around in other names as well. But Joe, can you tell us about the barred owl and this name in particular? Well, you can just play the sound again, I guess.
It's my favorite owl sound. My favorite owl sound. I don't think I know exactly who my favorite owl is yet, but yeah, there is that onomatopoeia. So we kind of have kind of like a little methodology that we try to figure out with each bird for all of the different sounds of all of the different names to try to find out exactly which species we are talking about. And this is something that I've suspected for a very long time, is that a gokoko is how we can describe so many different owls. But each owl has its own specific name that is describing a very unique behavior, physical characteristic, pattern that it accomplishes. And that is what we choose to emulate that species, just like the singing, the crying song of the eastern screech owl. That's how we describe this one. But I think gokoko, if it's not describing the whole family of owls, it's describing this one specifically, because you could just kind of hear just the way that it sounds. Gokoko. My grandma does it real good. Like, exactly. Yeah, so you can just kind of hear it right in the name. But yeah, I really like this one.
And I learned from you, Andres, that barred owls have a very unique behavior of, like, hunting very actively on the ground. Can you talk a little bit about the habitat that they prefer?
They really like woody areas close to water, and in many cases, barred owls have been seen wading. Can you imagine an owl just walking in the water to catch some fish? And barred owls are less vicious than some of their close relatives, less vicious than the great horned owls and the eastern screech owl. It has smaller talons than the great horn, and so it has a more limited type of prey that it goes to. But it can be very active on the ground. But I want to circle back to the process that Joe was talking about. One of the challenging things of what we've been doing is that in many cases, Joe goes into a community and he finds a name. But that name might have been disconnected from a bird. And in some cases, people know a bird and they don't know their name. And so what we've been trying to do is working back on the names and on the bird knowledge to understand who does the name belong to. You might remember that Joe said this name, Gokoko, could be the name of the family, the name of the group of owls, or very specifically the name for this owl. And it's because in that process, we need to try to dissect the name so we find who it belongs to. Right, Joe?
Yeah, what each of those sounds are describing is specific to each species. Yeah.
And so, you know, on that note of trying to find those accurate names, we come to what would seem very reasonable, but really in practice doesn't quite pan out. So this is the name Wabgokokok. And so the Wab part is part of the word Wabshkike, which is white, to be white. And the Gokokok you've already been familiarized with. So this is kind of saying like, this is a white barred owl. And when I said this name to Joe, because so much of my understanding of Anishinaabe Moin is from dictionaries and trying to find resources online, he immediately went, yeah, but I never hear that in community. And so Joe, tell me the struggle you have with this name.
So this is really fun for, you know, like especially for the indigenous people in this audience or people who are really wanting to learn the language. You run into this a lot, and I have so much experience with this with plants, kind of transliterations or the way that some research was done, because what happens in research in indigenous communities for so long has been so extractive, is that you find lots of error. You find lots of research that is done, just maybe not in the best practice. So with this one, I've never heard anybody in any community. I go and I teach about medicine in hundreds of communities and hundreds of institutions all over Ontario, all over the Great Lakes region. And as payment to me, I ask the community to find people who have bird knowledge, because this is honestly what I've been obsessed with for a very long time. I like telling everybody, I never really liked plants. This was kind of just given to me, and I am responsible for this. And I've been doing the best I could with what I was given for plant medicine knowledge. And so when I go and teach, I want to learn about birds because this is what I really am obsessed with. And so, when I go to work in a community to teach about plants, find your bird knowledge holders and try to bring them out to the event, so that during lunchtime and breaks, I could pick their brain and try to find any kind of knowledge that I can about bird names. And I've yet a community to go to where there has been a bird knowledge holder who confidently said, "Wapkokokok, that's a snowy owl." Most of them honestly say, "I do not know." And most of them gestured to Gokoko being the name of the family of owls. That's all of our owls are Gokoko. You know, they all embody all of the sounds that name is responsible for. And just to say Wap Gokoko is a little bit of an easy out. And it's our job to do the research required to be able to find what probably the snowy owl's real name is. Yeah, so we have our work cut out for us. That was a really good point. I really wanted to make sure